For once, the Green Bay Packers are on the winning end of a Hail Mary thrown at the end of the game. And it was set up by a controversial call that gave the Packers an untimed down. Did they deserve to win? And is this the turning point in the season? Those are questions and more we'll examine with Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Packers fans, welcome to Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're talking about a come-from-behind victory on the road at the Motor City, the Motor City Miracle, some people are calling it. To talk about that game, to sum it up, we have a guest joining us as he does the first Friday of every month. We have Scott McKenna, the Talkin' Smack blog.
Expert interview.
Scott, how you doing this morning? That sums it up pretty well. By the way, happy Rodgers Favre Star Day.
Unbelievable. It's great. Yeah. Unbelievable. 12, 11, 15, huh?
Yes, yes. Scott, to start things off, just your reaction to the Hail Mary at the end of the game. What was going through your mind when that ball fell in Richard Rodgers' hands?
You know, it was such a symbolic play. If you look at the moment in time where the Packers were truly, truly desperate, and their season was, it felt like it was hanging in the balance. There was all kinds of frustration echoing throughout the throughout the team, and you could just feel the vibe, and it was full. And for when Richard Rodgers came down with that ball, it just felt like there was the moment of hope and the moment of brilliance that we needed, and this team needed a moment of jubilation, a communal moment of jubilation. Man, this community, this the Packers team, this franchise, these fans that are just so integral within this team. I mean, we're tied together in a lot of ways, and we all, you know, we're karmically influenced together. And we really needed a moment that that brought everything together, especially in light of a big playoff run that we're starting right now. And in a big game that's going to be heading next week in Dallas, and needed this crowd to be fully engaged. And I was just felt so symbolic at the time, seeing that this team was really desperate, and the victory comes through on a desperate pass from Rodgers to Rodgers. Just a touch of magic and a moment of brilliance, without a doubt.
I can't even believe the Packers were in a position to win that game. What is your assessment of Richard Rodgers? I called it perhaps the best game of his career, even before the Hail Mary. And then to come down to that, I thought was the icing on the cake. Were you surprised at his play, given this is a guy who's been pretty roundly criticized for not being able to gain yards after the catch? And not that he had many on the Hail Mary, but he had a big game.
I wasn't necessarily as surprised as how well he played. I was surprised that the Packers actually attacked the middle of the field. They've just it's been such an area of the field that they've abandoned outside of the, you know, maybe the game that they went to Perillo against the Lions the first time. But they really went after Richard Rodgers and over the middle of the field, and they caught him in stride where he was coming right out of his break on some of those skinny posts. And there seemed to be a rhythm and a timing that they had found together, and maybe a little bit of trust from Aaron to Richard there as well. So he was catching Rodgers as he was going up the field rather than when he's sort of running laterally on one of those down and out, short down and out routes. But, yeah, just really, really exciting. And it's true, before that, even before the Hail Mary, it did come across as though it was Richard Rodgers' best game of his young career.
Yeah, there's definitely trust there from Aaron in Richard. No doubt about that. He has a reliable pair of hands. Not that he's been immune from drops, but he probably does it at a rate lower than anybody else on the team. And I know I was, you know, among the most vocal of his critics just on the last episode of Railbird Central on Wednesday. But he's proving me wrong, and that's good. I mean, I think there needs to be more players like Richard Rodgers proving us wrong at this point if the Packers are going to turn this boat around and make a run in the playoffs. Scott, what are your feelings on the face mask call on the game's penultimate play? Did the Packers get away with one?
You know, I thought it was a penalty live, and even in replay, it did look like maybe the finger got inside the face mask. But I'd throw this back to you, and I'd say, you know, Brian, do you think, wasn't the play before as controversial as the face mask? I mean, the play before looked like it could have easily been called a pass interference. Sure, he turned his head, but he didn't make a play on the ball by any stretch of the imagination. He ran Aberdeers over and prevented him from making a play. And, you know, so I thought that there was equal controversy on both plays. And, I mean, am I far off there?
No, I think it could have gone either way. I can understand how it would be a no call, but by the same token, I can understand how the face mask was called. I don't know of a ref that would be alive that would have not called that a face mask. I guess you could argue, should it have been reviewed and overturned, though?
Well, you know, I don't think it is a reviewable play, is it? If I don't know that a face mask is a reviewable play. So unless they were to change the rule, well, then possibly. And if it, even if you were to review it, to my eye, it looked like the finger got inside the face mask. And anytime you see the finger on the face mask and then the helmet end up in a position and the way it did and where the head official was standing, it really did look like, the penalty should have been called. And again, I got a biased eye, but it really felt to me like that shouldn't even be up for debate. And I don't see it as a thing that should be made as controversial as I know that the media is trying to play it up as.
It's difficult to have much sympathy when the Packers have been on the other end, and perhaps was it appropriate that Golden Tate was on the opposing sideline of all players to see the Packers win on a Hail Mary?
It's really a funny irony.
All right, Scott, let's rewind a little bit. How did you feel at halftime when this team was down 17-0 and seemingly nothing was going right, other than maybe the defense showed some fight in the second quarter? Did you feel the Packers at that point deserved to win the game?
You know, they needed a spark. And, you know, it's my exact thoughts were I felt like the team was, they needed somebody to make a play. And they just seemed as though they were a dead outfit. Mastey's kicking balls off the side of his foot in the first punt. Crosby's missing chip shot field goals. You know, it just they have breakdowns offensively that lead to quick points for Detroit. Not able to establish a run game. And then also one of the plays that really, really, really frustrated me was the deep ball to Janis. Janis had a step, and I thought Rodgers threw a perfect pass. And for my eye, and maybe I'm off here, but it seemed as though Janis slowed down there. When if he would have just kept his stride, he had a step, and the ball would have landed right in his lap. And I don't know why he slowed down there, or if he was trying to draw contact, a pass interference call, or what was happening there. And then he just, or if he misjudged it, or you know, I guess I can't make that up or make sense of what happened there. But for what really frustrated me was that I felt like this team needed a spark, a big play, something that just changed the energy of the franchise. And we've just been stuck in a rut. And just as a team, it's kind of felt as though, you know, this year we've been pressing rather than maybe having fun and maybe a little bit of a hangover since the NFC Championship game of last year, where they're trying to, rather than enjoying the journey, they're trying to just force themselves to get to the end, to the finish line. And I felt like that was all in, came to the forefront in the first half of that of the game yesterday, and it seemed like it was going to be a real, real difficult task for the Packers to be able to come back. And you know, we've just been so banged up, and you're playing with, you know, without three of the starters on the offensive line, and it's just it was a head scratcher as to how you could even make out a potential victory even there, I will say.
Don't get me started on Jeff Janis, because I'm totally mad at this Packers coaching staff. They give him a shot. He's playing in the rotation at the beginning of the game. They give him one shot at like this 40-yard pass downfield. And I agree, Jeff Janis did not. He slowed down. He didn't run a good route. But I mean, that pass is completed 1/3 of the time to any wide receiver, maybe 40% of the time. And that's it. That's it. That's all you're going to give them. If you can't make 40-yard plays down the field, you can't even be on the field. He deserves an opportunity to fail. I mean, he failed, but he's not failing at any more of a rate than Devontae Adams is. I just don't get it.
I agree, man. Didn't Adams, there was a 2nd and 14 play that I thought Adams didn't run. He didn't finish the route. And he kind of took it upfield a step, and it fell incomplete. It hit off his hands. And you know, I'm like, what the heck? And the same thing with Everett Harris could be said. He didn't see as much playing time as I thought he might have. And I didn't know if that was because in the 3rd down play, he rounded his route 2 yards short of the 1st down and didn't get to the sticks. Or, you know, the tolerance that the coaching staff has for some players that they don't have for others, I just don't understand.
Yeah.
And, this could be a good segue into Jake Ryan, man, where we've led with Nate Palmer at the inside linebacker spot. And the one time we gave Ryan a shot in the second half of the Carolina game, he was spectacular. We went back to Palmer and just continued to accept less than mediocre performances from him. And to see Ryan yesterday, didn't he look great?
Oh, fantastic. I mean, we can expand this discussion here to, you know, most of the rookies on the team. In addition to Jake Ryan, Quentin Rollins, he battled. I don't think either were perfect, but they battled. And they showed some, you know, optimism for this young Packers defense going forward.
We look like we're a tougher and a faster team when we've got Rollins and we've got Ryan there. And, you know, Rollins coming across the middle of the field, and he's and playing the slot. He's not afraid to sell out his body. You know, even on the play that, you know, he got beat on the final 3rd down play where, he sold out. And, you know, maybe not the best footwork, maybe lost his hips just a little bit. But he was right in position, and that's all stuff that really leads to optimism for the future. And then the way that Ryan attacks plays in the run game is just, boy, it's exciting. And then even after the catch, when he was beat on a couple of passes, you know, there wasn't much yak. And those are ways that we've been exposed. Our defense has played great this year, but those are ways that we have been exposed and beat consistently throughout the season. Ryan really showed well there.
Yeah, they finally make the decision. Like I said, it probably came 3 weeks too late for the decision to put Jake Ryan in the starting lineup, but better late than never, I guess. The loyal to a fault coaching staff shows their true colors again. I don't know whether that's there's something to be said for it. I don't know if there's enough to be said for it.
But then they aren't loyal to Eddie Lacy, and that I don't get. Right? So something else is going on there, and nobody knows.
Eddie Lacy deserves an apology from the coaching staff. Yeah, he had 5 carries for 4 yards. Eddie Lacy doesn't deserve to be 5 carries and done for the night. That happens to NFL running backs sometimes. Who knows? His 6th carry might have been he broke off for a 50-yard gain.
You're so true. And, man, especially after the last 2 performances that he's had. And, You know, it's just I couldn't make sense of it. And you know, he did. This is a, you know, one. Let me swing this. One of the things that I've loved about Mike McCarthy throughout his tenure here with the Packers is that there's been two things that I felt he's done very, very, very well, and maybe better than anybody else in the league. He's always had a locker room that believed in him. Mm-hmm. That when people were beat up, remember when B.J. Raji, 2011, he just wasn't himself. He came mm-hmm. off the year in 2010 where he was spectacular, and in 2011 he wasn't himself. And all of a sudden, McCarthy's looking to give Raji the ball at the goal line to, you know, have his fridge moment, and just to do anything to maybe to light a fire out of this guy, to get him some fun. I think he could go through time and pick out moments like that where he's done that sort of thing for players. You know, Julius Peppers and throwing him the pass in the end zone last year as a tight end, just trying to do things to keep people excitable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it doesn't seem like he's taken that same approach with Lacy. And Lacy seems like he's a fun-loving kind of guy that could really use a mental boost. And not to say that McCarthy's got to be a babysitter, but one of his key roles is to make sure this team's attitude stays in the right fashion, to have a winning attitude. And Lacy doesn't seem to be carrying that right now for whatever reason. And it seems like his soul is ingrained in a way in which he would be the naturally positive guy. But, you know, so, and then the other thing is he's an offensive wizard. And this year he's kind of, it doesn't seem like he's as involved in the offense. Even when you see the coaches funnel up, he's not even the guy that's leading the charge there. When, you know, that's what, you know, he kind of does best, I feel. So, you know, I almost wonder what his role is right now as a head coach of the team.
It's getting to the point where he might have to take back play calling duties, because it just, we're now, what, 12 games into the season, and it hasn't gotten any better. And I suppose you could argue that even under McCarthy, there's been a tendency to get away from the running game. As it has been under Tom Clements this year, they even when they're down, you know, it's, but it, you know, as long as it's not the last half of the fourth quarter, if you're down early in the third, you still stick with the run game. They haven't done that this year. They need to. But let's come back here to the Packers passing game. Where are you at with that, Scott? Because despite a win, things hardly seemed like they were fixed. Receivers still couldn't get open, and I know we kind of alluded to this. And outside of the last 3 minutes of the game, Aaron Rodgers was once again pretty pedestrian. Is there any hope this thing is going to turn around?
Without a doubt there is. You know, Lang's going to get healthy. Bulaga is going to get healthy. The schedule's in our favor right now. We get 10 days off, and you know, we're going to be playing a Dallas team that's going to be coming on a short week. And additionally, you know, we need to get Ty Montgomery back, right? Like Montgomery and Cobb seem to be really, really, really a dual threat together, where you could mix and match them, and it led to great unpredictability. And, you know, additionally, you know, Corliss isn't a world beater by any stretch, but he's just another guy that understands the offense and has proven to be able to find his way as far as getting open, and doesn't always catch the ball, but he does get open. And he's another guy that Rodgers has trust in. He's got confidence in. He runs a crisp route, and I think he'll also help in the blocking game as well. But you know, if you can get Montgomery and you can get Corliss back, maybe not next week against Dallas, but for the following week and for the final stretch, you know, against Oakland, Arizona, and Minnesota. You know, I definitely think we've got weapons that are coming back, and this time is going to be good for Bakhtiari, who was absolutely fantastic yesterday, to continue to get healthy, and for, you know, Lindsley to get healthy, and you get Lang healthy, and you get Bulaga healthy, and all of a sudden we get our troops back. So we took a strategic move yesterday to not play Bulaga and Lang through pain, and to try and buy an extra week to get him healthy. And we were fortunate with the Hail Mary pass to come away with a victory, and now hopefully that extra week is going to buy us some time to get us healthy.
Okay, you talked about the guys the Packers didn't have. How did you think the offensive line performed, considering they were without three and even four starters for a stretch during the game?
It's you know, it was a gutty performance, a tough environment. It seemed like the Lions crowd was really, really into it. They had a moment of belief, it felt like, and it was nice to kind of rip their heart out at there at the end of the game. But you know, Bakhtiari was sensational, and it's just one of those games that, you know, it adds to legend. I mean, Ziggy Ansah is an elite pass rusher. And other than the play in which he didn't play, Bakhtiari didn't play, Ansah was, you know, I don't want to say he was silent, but, you know, he was limited. He was limited, I will say. And Bakhtiari really neutralized him and had a great game and really gutted it out. And I thought that sitting outside of the face mask penalty had a decent game as well. And then, you know, when you're putting Lane Taylor in there and his first start ever, tough spot, was surprised that Walker wasn't given that nod. But I will say that, you know, Taylor was not exceptional by any stretch of the imagination, but he was good enough. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was interesting that the first two plays of the game, they ran right behind Taylor. And so there was clearly a vote of confidence there from the, you know, from you know, the offensive coaching staff. And then, you know, Barclay just, he struggled. And, there's no other way to put it. There's I will say he had a big block on the Hail Mary play, kind of a might have got the guy from behind, but he did have a big block there to give Rodgers the freedom to be able to run forward. But you know, I was frustrated to see that that Barkley got overpowered, because he's kind of a fighter. He's a battler, and he's the kind of guy that just kind of gets in the way, where sometimes when there's that speed power combination, you know, it's you know, you can get beat on a double move, which I think he did one time, but he was just getting beat up. He was just getting pushed backwards and collapsed in the pocket. And I did think that the play of the centers, both Treader and Lindsay, was sufficient. It wasn't elite, but it got the job done, and there wasn't a lot of pressure into the face of Rodgers, and that's oftentimes where he struggles the most.
Yeah, 10 games off until the next game for the offensive line. That's going to be bigger than anyone to get that kind of the mini bye week coming up, I guess you could say. Scott, there was a lot of attention on Julius Peppers coming into the game because he missed his first practice in a Packers uniform. Then he basically looked non-existent for all but one play. But he sure has a knack for making plays. If he was going to make only one play, you couldn't ask for anything more. So you I know, guess my question is, does one good play make up for 50 average to bad ones?
Well, you know, it's funny because we needed a game-changing play. That Doug Evans for the interception return for a touchdown from 1996 type play. You know, we needed something, and I really do think that the Peppers play really set everything up, and really it's the first time I think that there was really hope that was offered for the game. And you know, that we don't have a lot of guys that are making those plays on defense right now. We just don't. And because of that, you know, you need him there. I will say it's troubling when you see run plays early in the game where, you know, outside containment is there and, you know, Peppers gets beat to the inside between the guard and the tackle, when if he just held his gap, we'd be able to, the play would turn to nothing. But, you know, it was a monumental play in the game, and hopefully it turns out to be a monumental play in the season as well. And, but yeah, it is a tricky situation because, you know, we don't have a lot of guys on this defense for whatever reason right now that seem to be able to force turnovers. But Peppers is clearly one of them. And because of it, we need him out on the field right now.
Quick thoughts on John Crockett, who the Packers signed just hours before Thursday's game.
Looked quick, looked jittery, looked excitable, kind of like myself when you said, you know, Rodgers, Favre, star day, and I say 12-11-15 rather than 12-4-15, right? It's just, you know, it wasn't punctual, it wasn't perfect, but he did add a little quickness, he added a little spark. That was nice to see. There was clearly some trouble as far as communication and the handoffs. There was a couple of times it seemed like he was bobbling the football, and there was, you know, Rodgers had to turn one time, and he was turning the wrong direction, whether it was You'd have to assume that would be on Crockett and not on Rodgers, but there's definitely stuff to work on. Granted, it was his first day on the roster, but he was excitable. He added a little bit of a spark at a time of need, and it was nice to see him get to the second level of the defense because we hadn't spent much time there.
Last question before we let you go. Is this the turning point in the season?
You're asking the guy that considers himself like the ultimate optimist. You know, the Packers needed to win three games before these final two. We needed the game against the Lions. We need this game against Dallas. And boy, I'm actually flying back for the game. And I hope that Lambeau is standing for four quarters. And I hope that there's an intoxicating feeling coming from the vibrancy of the crowd. And we need this place rowdy, we need it raucous, and we need it loud. And I really feel like it's the type of game that could give there's times that the fans need to give a spark to the team. And I'm not sure that that happened in Chicago or against Chicago, and we need that to happen this weekend. And, I'd ask you, Brian, that over the next week that you're promoting a real rowdy and loud crowd and to get people off their ass and on their feet. And I think that that's a real big thing that we need to get back is our home field advantage at Lambeau Field. And I do think that this is going to be a turning point for us. And I do think that so much of sports is about attitude and it's about community inside the locker room. And as I said to start this thing, the Packers needed a moment of jubilation. They needed a moment of excitement, and they got that last night. And I thought that Rodgers' attitude and Rodgers' persona in the interview after the game was telling. When he was caught in raw action on the field, that was spectacular fun. That's sports entertainment at its height. And I think that we're going to go in and play a Dallas team that is beat up as well. I hope to win that one handily. I'd like to think that we'll be able to go out to Oakland and come away with a victory. And, it puts us in position to say, hey, who knows? Who knows how this thing could be? We're only two games out of behind Arizona for a first-round bye, as crazy as that sounds. And we play them once. So you could have you could win the head-to-head battle there. So we need to go on a run. And then additionally, I'd like to say this thing to Packer fans, as crazy as this sounds. But before we play again, Minnesota has a game against Seattle and a game at Arizona. Mm-hmm. And there's a chance that when we play against the Cowboys, that game is for sole possession of first place. And if not, kudos to Minnesota for winning it. When we play the Cowboys, I'm saying, in 2 weeks.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Because the Minnesota has a game Sunday and then they play Thursday.
Yes, yes. So assuming, no, I got
yeah,
you.
Yeah. Yeah, assuming they lose both those games, tough games, and if they win one of them, kudos to them. But if not, the Packers are playing the Cowboys for sole possession of first place in the NFC North. And as crazy and as wild as the month of November was, and I think we'd all like to forget it, we're still in a healthy position moving forward to be able to make a successful run to close the season.
I'll buy that. Scott, I think that's a good note to end on. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you again the first Friday of the month of January. I guess we'll be celebrating a new year then.
Stoked for it, Brian. Go Pack, go, and happy holidays to you and yours.
All right, same to you. See ya. Scott McKenna, the Talkin' Smack blog, joining us here on a Friday morning, the day after, the aftermath of the Motor City Miracle, Packers winning on a Hail Mary. Thanks to him for joining us today. Thanks to you, the listener, for joining us as we continue on.
Packers news of the day.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers this Friday, they win 27-23. Amazing victory, to say the least. Just to, piggyback on what Scott was saying before we get into the chips report, I am a big believer in momentum. Even if a team has flaws, if they start believing in themselves, it just seems to build, and it can, get a team to do things that they maybe didn't think they were capable of doing. And I think that's what maybe this does. I think there's still going to be issues with this Packers passing game going forward. You heard me talk probably the last few episodes. I thought that playing in a domed environment in Detroit would might be a cure for the Packers passing game. It wasn't really, I mean, outside of the Hail Mary. So there's going to be rough patches going forward, but if they can just do enough to win, I think you get this huge win against Detroit. You got a very, very winnable game at home against Dallas. Again, that even if it doesn't look pretty, boy, you win that game, you're two in a row, and you're all of a sudden maybe in a position to be in first place back in the NFC North. These things just kind of snowball like that, and then you face an Oakland Raiders team that's okay. That's a place you can steal a win there. There's a lot of things to be very, very encouraged about heading into the end of the season, and you just hope they snowball. Perhaps that's good as we get into the about to transition to the winter months here. Packers got to start a snowball here, and maybe this was the beginning. Maybe they pack that initial snowball on Thursday night, and now they're just gonna keep rolling. But all right. Let's use the Chips report as a roadmap for an assessment of the players in Thursday night's game. And I think this is a good point. The two blue chip players, Richard Rodgers is one of them. We've already spent a good amount of time talking about him. So the guy I'd like to give a little bit of love to right now, who we probably didn't discuss much with Scott McKenna during our interview, Clynn Dix. He may have been the best player in green and gold on Thursday night. If you consider in like the whole factor of how a player plays, and Richard Rodgers was once again not very good in the run blocking game, he more than made up for it with the best receiving game of his career. But if you consider his run blocking, there were some flaws there. A guy who seemed to be flawless on Thursday night was safety Clynn Dix. And I'll tell you what, he's been on an uptick ever since that implosion on the sideline against, was that the Lions game? Was that Minnesota? With him and Julius Peppers getting into it on the sideline, that seems to have been a turning point. He didn't have a good game in that game either, regardless of what happened on the sideline. But since that point, he's been very good and great on Thursday night against the Detroit Lions. And Clynn Dix, he was the only guy to register two quarterback hits, one of them being a sack. So he's applying pressure, something he's been doing for the past few games. They've really kind of expanded this blitz package to include the secondary a lot more often than they were early in the season. Dom Capers was, so he's got that. But just how sure his tackling was, so early in the season, you're always, you know, complaining about Clynn Dix missing tackles. He made seven tackles, and it seemed like every one of them was short of the sticks on last night. Just keeping the Lions from converting first downs. He was reliable. He was taking guys' knees out from under him. He even had the tackle there that knocked Golden Tate out of the game for a while. Not that I'm encouraging, you know, injuries, you know, intentionally or anything like that. But I mean, he's just doing his job, though. And it's not like there was any ill intent on that tackle regardless. But Clynn Dix, fantastic, fantastic play. I think if you were to grade players, he would have the highest grade. I think if we had Pro Football Focus's grades from this game, Clynn Dix should have the best grade overall of any player, in my opinion. I guess, you know, I only watched the game live. I haven't watched a replay of it, but he was fantastic. And Richard Rodgers gets the other blue chip. Any shortcomings he had in the run blocking department were more than made up with what he did in the passing game. It wasn't just a Hail Mary. He had the big, like, it was a 23-yard reception in the third quarter that set up the Packers' first touchdown of the game. That was fantastic. They attacked the middle of the field with them. He showed a little bit of being able to run after the catch, and maybe that was a factor of simply getting him the ball a little bit more downfield instead of these little 2 to 3 yard outs. If you hit him in stride, That can cure a lot of things, you know, instead of a guy catching the ball at a standstill and then trying, you know, obviously he doesn't have a ton of speed, but if you hit him in stride, it's a whole lot easier to gain yards after the catch. So kudos to the Packers offense to seemingly, you know, that was one thing they kind of fixed and did a lot better. You know, whether that's, you know, Tom Clements, Mike McCarthy, Edgar Bennett, I don't know who's to credit for that. But they really got Richard Rodgers involved in a different dynamic, I guess. And so kudos to all involved with that. Blue chip performances all around there. Your red chips, the good, maybe not great players. I thought David Bakhtiari, and we talked about this with Scott McKenna. He did a good job summing up the worth of the value of David Bakhtiari. You basically, he was kind of like invisible, but invisible in a good way, in that, you know, when you're lining up across from Ezekiel Ansah, one of the best pass rushers in the game, to have him basically be neutralized, to be ineffective, was fantastic. He did a good job just you know, protecting Aaron Rodgers, largely keeping the pocket clean. And when once all of a sudden David Bakhtiari came out, now the Lions run a stunt. Ansah gets to Rodgers for a sack. You saw the position the Packers were in without him, but he makes a gritty return to the game. And I think that really lifted the Packers' spirits, and he guts it out. And David Bakhtiari did very deserving of kudos. Of course, offensive linemen probably not always, you know, the types that get that recognition, but they will on this show. So good job, David Bakhtiari. And Jake Ryan, and good job by the coaching staff for finally making the move. He wasn't perfect. He gave up a few receptions, but he made 10 tackles. He had the big tackle for a loss on the Lions' last possession of the game, where the Packers had to force a punt. That was a big moment. He recovered Julius Peppers' fumble. Jake Ryan is a guy who needs to be out on the field the rest of the season, no matter what. Like I said, I'm not saying the Packers need to cut Nate Palmer. That's fine that he's on the roster and he can be out there in case an injury happens. But Jake Ryan is the better player, and he did a good job in his first career start. A move the Packers should have made weeks ago, but regardless, he's out there now, and there should be no looking back. I can't imagine the Packers reverting back to Nate Palmer or anything like that. Cow chip performances. Don Barclay, and again, I'm just repeating now what Scott McKenna already talked about. Don Barclay got bull rushed on several occasions. It's kind of interesting that, you know, you thought maybe on turf it's kind of the type of game where guys might beat you with quickness around the edge. Instead, Don Barclay gets bull rushed and, it, you know, gives up several pressures, including the strip sack in the second quarter that the Packers were lucky to recover there. Corey Linsley ends up getting the fumble recovery, but Don Barclay was the victim there, victimized on several rushes, you know, allowing pressure during the game, has the false start in the fourth quarter. You know, the Packers need Brian Bulaga out there if, you know, that's the preferable option. Don Barclay just, you know, it's back to where it was during the preseason, where we were all kind of, he did a good, admirable job during that stretch while Bulaga was out early in the year, but Don Barclay was arguably the worst player in green and gold on the field on Thursday night. And James Jones, the other cow chip. And, you know, it's not totally about the interception.
Packers news of the day.
Sorry about that, folks. I didn't mean to hit that button. I blame both Aaron Rodgers and James Jones. It wasn't a perfect pass. Aaron Rodgers sailed it a little higher than he wanted to, but it hit James Jones' hands. I mean, yeah, Megatron probably comes down with that football, but James Jones is not Megatron. Maybe it's a little unfair to put, you know, compare him to him or any elite wide receiver like that, but I still think it hits his hands. It probably shouldn't be hitting anybody else's, if nothing else. But it just is part of the larger tapestry here of the struggles of James Jones. He got one out of three targeted passes on the night. He can't get open, and he's probably struggling to get open more than anybody else on the team, more than Davante Adams, more than Randall Cobb, although the contest between James Jones and Davante Adams is pretty darn close. Adams isn't doing a very good job either outside of his touchdown. Great job on the touchdown, Davante Adams. First touchdown of the season. That kept you out of the cow chips category, but there's still a lot of improvement that needs to be made from both players, as the Packers receiving department is still the greatest weakness on this team overall. Maybe for last night's game, maybe the offensive line was more of a weakness. It's neck and neck, but there was, you know, missing three and four starters for a time period. Whereas these are the Packers starters at wide receiver that are struggling. And I don't know if it's going to get better. The return of Andrew Corliss can help. The return of a healthy Ty Montgomery can help, but are they the cure-all? I'm dubious. In the world of the Green Bay Packers,
the day ahead
this Friday, the Packers still have not announced, as of prior to the show, what time Mike McCarthy's, you know, his day after game press conference is at yet. So we're still kind of waiting on that. But if we look not just at the day ahead, but at the days ahead, it is now the mini bye week that the Packers need pretty darn badly for many players, particularly on the offensive line, where they were without Bulaga and Lang last night. Lindsley aggravates an injury during the game. Bakhtiari can need time after gritting out an injury. All these guys are banged up. Josh Sitton was even on the injury report coming into the game. They need this rest. Those guys, if they don't have Friday, Saturday, and Sunday off, at least something's wrong. These guys need a break where they're not doing anything. They're sitting on the couch and man, maybe they're on an exercise bike or something like that, but there should be nothing too strenuous in their futures. They're just allowed to get a little bit of R&R and time to recover. But not that. I mean, Ty Montgomery, a guy who's, but now missed six straight games with this ankle injury that dates back pre-bye week. Now he gets the mini-bye. I don't know if that's going to be still enough time, because it seems like Ty Montgomery has had a setback. But still, he needs time, as does everybody who's dealing with injury issues, heading into this game. Demaryius Randle, who missed the game, he's dealing with knee and hamstring issues. It starts now. The Packers needed this 10 days between games like nobody's business. And they basically needed it right after the bye week. It's all of a sudden you thought they were getting healthy after the Packers had their bye, and then all of a sudden, like, the injuries started cropping up right away again, especially on the offensive line. But that's good. That's what we're looking forward to over these next few days. Packers should enjoy this time off and get back to work probably on Monday and try to get ready for this Dallas Cowboys team at Lambeau Field next week, December 13th. That'll be a big, big moment, kind of a rematch from last year's divisional round playoff game that the Packers won at Lambeau Field. The Cowboys will be without Tony Romo. They're banged up, but it'll be a fun game regardless, and looking forward to that. And that'll do it for today's show, folks. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us here on a Friday morning. Enjoy your weekends. And we'll talk to you again on Monday, as the show airs every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time, the live edition of the show, podcasted on demand later in the day. I already got our guest lined up for Monday, our monthly engagement with Luke Rogers, brother of Aaron Rodgers, and insider, more importantly, at 24/7 Sports. We're excited to talk to him on Monday morning, get his thoughts and his analysis on this Packers team, as we get back to work after a weekend off here. So enjoy the weekend, folks. My call to action, If you've not done so already, one small thing we ask, please give us a rating and a review on iTunes. This show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. If you just do it once, that's all we ask. Give us a rating, and it helps us get the word out about the show, I think. Thanks a lot. Like I said, enjoy your weekend, folks. I leave you today with a song called Appropriately, Best Feeling by String Cheese Incident with Keller Williams on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.